Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 2 Samuel chapter 9, the story of David showing kindness to Mephibosheth, Saul's grandson, Jonathan's son. Our context is this. In chapter 8, David had won various victories over people like the Philistines, the Moabites, the Syrians, and the Edomites. As he continues to establish his kingdom after having taken over, after ruling 7.5 years at Hebron, and now after the northern 10 tribes, or the northern 11 tribes, I guess, had come over to David, David's establishing his kingdom. Some time has passed. We start now in 2 Samuel 9, 1 through 3. Then David said, "Is there yet anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba. And they called him to David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "I am your servant." Then the king said, "Is there not yet anyone of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God?" And Ziba said to the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan who is crippled in both feet." Now, the New American Standard Version Bible starts out in verse 1 by saying, "Then David said." Now, that "then" is not meant to indicate time. It's like, "Then Little Red Riding Hood saw the wolf." It's meant to indicate the next stage in the story. Holman Christian Study Bible in verse 1 doesn't even have a time indicator. That translation says this: "David asked, is there anyone remaining from Saul's family?" Not "now David asked" or "then David asked." So it's not meant to show that right after David's victories, David is looking for Mephibosheth. It happened a fairly long time after David had been established. Mephibosheth was 5 when Saul was slain at Jezreel, as we'll see from another verse in this chapter. He was 5. And then David ruled in Hebron for 7.5 years. So that means Mephibosheth is about 12 when David took over the entire kingdom, north as well as south. And some other more time has gone on because Mephibosheth is now married with a young child. As we see in verse 12, Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. So the question now arises, why did David take so long to think of Mephibosheth? Well, the answer to that, he was busy setting up his kingdom. He was fighting wars, appointing officials. As Adam Clark says, reasons of state often destroy all the charities of life. Ask that of any politician. That's the honest to goodness truth. Now notice when he asked for anyone left of the house of Saul, he adds this purpose clause, "that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake." He didn't just say, "is anyone left of the house of Saul?" Because if he'd have said that, anyone hearing him would think, oops, David's going to start killing Saul's descendants because he wants to secure his throne. That's what they did back then. That's what kings did. So he adds in his request to find anyone left of the house of Saul, he adds to that request, "I want to show him kindness." Why? For Jonathan's sake, because remember, David is very, very close to Jonathan. They had sworn a covenant with each other and renewed it at least once. So one of Saul's servants named Ziba was known about, and so David's people called Ziba. David repeats his request to Ziba, and Ziba says, "Well, I've still got one son of Jonathan who is crippled in both feet." Now, why was he crippled in both feet? Well, Jonathan apparently had taken Mephibosheth, his son, to the Battle of Gilboa. Gilboa is that mountain right up there, right a little bit southwest of Jezreel, which is the city on the south end of the south side of the Jezreel Valley. That was Saul and Jonathan's last battle because they got killed at that battle, got nailed up on the wall at Bethshan nearby. But Jonathan had carried Mephibosheth to that battle. I don't know why. Saul had left his son Ishbosheth back in Gibeah, the capital of the Israelites, probably because he probably realized he might get killed and he needs an heir to carry on the throne. But Jonathan didn't have the same reason for leaving Mephibosheth, and so he carried Mephibosheth with him to the battle. Still, a 5-year-old kid you carry to a battle, I just don't know why he did that, but he did. But then when Saul lost the battle, and Saul and Jonathan got killed, Mephibosheth's nurse grabbed the kid and ran like crazy, and then in the process, she dropped the kid. He fell and became lame. Must have been a bad fall. Probably somewhere on a rocky crag somewhere on a hill. But at least she picked him up and kept going. Now, that lameness in his feet kept Mephibosheth from any participation in public life. Thus, David had never heard of him. Plus, he had nothing to fear from him either, because crippled people don't become kings. And I suspect that's why Ziba said to the king, he's crippled in both feet. In other words, don't worry about him, David. He's crippled. He's not going to be a threat to your throne. We go now to 2 Samuel 9, verses 4 through 6. So the king, David, said to Ziba, where is he? In other words, where is this son of Jonathan? Lame in his feet. And Ziba said to the king, behold, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel in Lodabar. Then King David sent and brought Mephibosheth from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodabar. Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and prostrated himself. And David said, Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth said, here is your servant. So Ziba tells David, this descendant of Saul, the son of Jonathan. Well, actually, David didn't ask for a particular son of Jonathan. He just asked for anyone in Saul's house. And this was the one that was left who happened to be Jonathan's son. And Ziba tells David he is in the house of Machir. Now, Machir is a descendant of Machir, the son of Manasseh. In other words, it's another Machir. If you look at the timeline, the original Manasseh, the patriarch, that was about 900 years earlier. And so it went down from Manasseh to Machir, and maybe to another Machir. Gilead is among the descendants. We talked about that earlier when we were at the proper place. And so whenever you hear Machir, think Gilead, Manasseh, on the east side of the Jordan, the northernmost of the three tribes that are over there. Eastern half Manasseh is the northernmost tribe on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And so, but now this Lodabar is in the general area, except it's on the eastern side. It is speculated by BibleAtlas.com that it's in the Jordan Valley, right before you get to the hills to the east of the Jordan Valley, and it's about 9 or 10 miles south of the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee. Fairly much in the northern region of Israel. Again, this is questionable. There's a question mark by it on the map. Nobody knows exactly where it is or was. So the question arises, why was Mephibosheth living in obscurity on the other side of the Jordan to the north of Jerusalem? Well, here's some possible reasons to explain that. Perhaps his mother's relations may have lived there, and he went back to his mama's relations after the disasters had fallen his life. Maybe he was up there hiding from David. It was logical to fear that David might kill him because Mephibosheth is the successor of Saul. He's the sole surviving relative of the previous king, Saul. Another reason he might have been up there, he was lame. He couldn't participate in public life, so why not? Why not retire to the countryside? And besides, Ishbosheth, for 7 years, ruled down in Gibeah while David was at Hebron before the kingdom was consolidated. Ishbosheth was the heir of Saul. People would be looking to him, not a mere grandchild, especially a crippled grandchild. The son would have preference over the grandchild. So nobody had ever mentioned Mephibosheth's name as a successor, and so he's up there minding his own business in Lodabar. Now, one little incidental detail here. Mephibosheth in 1 Chronicles 8:34 is called Meribbaal. Chronicles has a lot of different names for our characters. But go to 2 Samuel 9, verses 7 through 8. David said to Mephibosheth, do not fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan. And I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly. Again, he prostrated himself and said, what is your servant? This is Mephibosheth, prostrated himself and said, what is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me? Now, David, first thing he says to Mephibosheth is, don't fear, because Mephibosheth had good reason to fear. Mephibosheth's grandfather Saul had mercilessly persecuted David for much of his life. Or maybe David actually looked at the fear on Mephibosheth, which I'm sure was there. He saw it and said, look, calm down. I'm not going to hurt you. So Mephibosheth goes from being in fear for his life to inheriting a bunch of land of a king. And also, he gets to eat at the current king's table. That must have been nice. Now, David has control over this land, the land of Saul. How did he get it legally? Well, he could have just inherited it. Well, he could have just taken it because he's the new king of Israel and the land belonged to the kingdom of Israel rather than to Saul. Personally, I don't know if they made those legal distinctions back then. Some people have suggested he might have inherited through Michal, Saul's daughter, who was David's wife, on the theory that once all your heirs are dead, the inheritance goes through the daughter. You recall that in Numbers 27, the issue of the daughters of Zelophehad, who didn't have any brothers when their father died. Jameson Fawcett and Brown quote that as saying that might be how David got the land, but there's a problem with that. Ishbosheth was alive at Saul's death. He would have inherited, not Michael. Ishbosheth was the closest living male relative. I think the reason that David had the land is because he confiscated the land after Ishbosheth's rebellion and said, okay, you want to rebel against me? Boom, land's mine. By right of conquest, as they say. But at any rate, David gave the land to Mephibosheth, who was living in poverty, most probably, and now he's rich. Whew, he won the lottery. Now, this servant of Saul, Ziba, David appointed to manage the land for Mephibosheth. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that Ziba was paid one half of the produce for his labor and expense, and the other half went to Mephibosheth. Now, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown quote 2 Samuel 19:29, which we're going to look at in just a minute, to come up with this idea. This is when the king David said to Mephibosheth, why do you still speak of your affairs? I have decided you and Ziba shall divide the land. And dividing the land, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown interpret as dividing the produce of the land. Well, that might be reasonable. You got to pay something to Ziba for his troubles. But now this Ziba shows up later in the story of David's monarchy. It's interesting. He was looking out for him, but then he turned on him. We see that when David was fleeing from Absalom during David's civil war, the monarchy's civil war, and Ziba lied about Mephibosheth and told David that Mephibosheth was a traitor and was trying to restore Saul's kingdom. We read that in 2 Samuel 16, verses 1 and verses 3 and 4. When David had gone a little beyond the summit, and remember, he's fleeing, he's running out of Jerusalem, going over to the east side of Jordan. When David had gone a little beyond the summit, Ziba, Mephibosheth's servant, was right there to meet him. He had a pair of saddled donkeys loaded with 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 bunches of summer fruit, and a skin of wine. Dropping down to verse 3, where is your master's grandson, your master Saul's grandson, Mephibosheth? The king David asked. Why, he's staying in Jerusalem, Ziba replied to the king. For he said, now here's where the lie comes. Today the house of Israel will restore my grandfather, i.e. Saul's, kingdom to me. The king said to Ziba, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is now yours. Now David just took Ziba's word for it. I guess he had no reason to doubt it, but he did check the situation out. He was under stress. He was running. It was a civil war. I understand that, but still. He took Ziba's word for it, and Ziba lied through his teeth. Ziba says, I bow before you, Ziba said. May you look favorably on me, my lord the king. So the scumbucket tried to steal Mephibosheth's land. Mephibosheth later on set the record straight in 2 Samuel 19, 26 through 30. My lord the king, he, Mephibosheth, replied, my servant, that's Ziba, betrayed me. Actually, your servant, me, Mephibosheth, said, I'll saddle the donkey for myself so that I may ride it and go with the king, for your servant is lame. Ziba slandered your servant to my lord the king, and Mephibosheth's telling the truth there. But my lord the king is like the angel of God, so do whatever you think best. For my grandfather's, that's Saul's, entire family deserves death from my lord the king. That's true. But you set your servant among those who eat at your table, so what further right do I have to keep on making appeals to the king? And Mephibosheth is one humble guy. He had to be. The king said to him, why keep on speaking about these matters of yours? I hereby declare you and Ziba are to divide the land. So basically, even though Ziba had lied to David, he didn't just boot Ziba off the land. I guess he figured Mephibosheth needed somebody to manage the land, so Ziba's back in place, but I wonder what the relations are between Ziba and Mephibosheth after Mephibosheth realizes that Ziba tried to throw him under the bus. Well, Mephibosheth keeps talking to the king here, and he says, instead, since my lord the king has come to his palace safely after the civil war, let Ziba take it all. Very humble. Now in verse 7, David tells Mephibosheth, we're back to the current time now, back to the time of 2 Samuel chapter 9. David has first met Mephibosheth, and David tells Mephibosheth, you shall eat at my table regularly. Now, some people speculate that doesn't really mean eat at the table. Literally, it just means eat at David's expense somewhere in the courtyard or in the palace complex. But it would mean, that at the very least, that Mephibosheth would have an apartment at court. And this was a very high honor. He's in the king's court. Well, it sounds to me like he was actually eating at David's table, just like one of his sons, as this text says later on. I would imagine a son of a king would eat at the table, literally, physically, not just at the king's expense. And then Mephibosheth, in verse 8, says, what is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me? Wow, that's a great metaphor. I'm a dead dog. That's humility, folks. A dead dog. Not just a dog, but a dead dog. Why would Mephibosheth call himself a dead dog? Well, remember, he's crippled in his feet. His family has been rejected by the Lord, Saul's family. God had long ago rejected Saul through Samuel. And Mephibosheth's family, the family of Saul, the Benjaminite, Mephibosheth's family had fought against David for 7.5 years while David was at Hebron. In other words, Saul's family, Ishbosheth, Saul's son, Ishbosheth, his only surviving son, Ishbosheth, was ruling Jerusalem and fighting David. So, yeah, Mephibosheth's humble, all right. He thought he was going to be killed, and so he calls himself a dead dog. A dead dog with two crippled, lame feet. And David exalts him, lets him eat at his table. Ooh, won the lottery. 2 Samuel 9, verses 9 through 13. Then the king called Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. Your master is Saul, your grandson is Mephibosheth." Because the tree went this way, Saul to Jonathan to Mephibosheth. David continues talking to Ziba in verse 10, "You and your sons and your servants shall cultivate the land for him, and you shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson, your master Saul's grandson, Jonathan, may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master Saul's grandson, Mephibosheth, shall eat at my table regularly." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so your servant will do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah, and all who lived in the house of Ziba were servants to Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate at the king's table regularly. Now he was lame in both feet. Now in verse 10, the text mentions that Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Why? Well, possibly to show that there was enough manpower to cultivate the land. That's 35 men who can farm the land. Could be it was mentioned to show that Mephibosheth would have a worthy equipage. He would be fitted out well enough to be like a king's son, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. Now, this phrase, "your master's grandson," I've been interpreting in the most logical way. For example, in verse 9, Ziba is spoken to by David, and David said, "All that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson." Your master being Saul, because Ziba used to work in Saul's house, and Saul's grandson is Mephibosheth, because Jonathan was Saul's son, and Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son. But some people have pointed out that perhaps David gave the land to Micah, Mephibosheth's son, who's mentioned in verse 12. So then you would read it this way, "All I have given," David says, "all I have given to your master Jonathan, his grandson Micah." Well, I don't know why you would say that. That's just an option. I don't think it's a good option. I'm assuming this is talking about, all is talking about Mephibosheth, not Micah. But at any rate, Micah is mentioned, and I guess that's why some people say that David might have been talking about Micah, but I don't think so. Usually you're talking about giving the property to people who are living, and then it descends later after they die. But at any rate, Micah is living, and he's preserved Jonathan's excellent name, so Jonathan's descendants managed to survive. You recall in the covenant with Jonathan that David made, Jonathan said, "Please don't kill my descendants," and David promised that. Let's take a look at that covenant that Jonathan made with David in 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 15. Jonathan tells David, "Don't ever withdraw your faithful love from my household, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth." Then Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David. Well, here we go. Promises fulfilled. Mephibosheth, Micah, they're still living. So ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished 2 Samuel chapter 9. In our next audio, we'll turn to 2 Samuel chapter 10, verses 1 through 19. And we will see some more victories by David as he defeats Ammon and Syria, Aram. Hope you stay tuned for that victorious chapter, and I hope you enjoyed this one.